It is a Monday. You know, professional sports somewhere in this state need to be good, right? And it is the Durham Bulls bringing him their third Triple A championship. Actually, professional sports in the Triangle do pretty well, right? Canes, Stanley Cup, had other playoff success. Bulls, crush it. Basically the best minor league baseball team there are. In Charlotte, not so much. The Panthers played yesterday, so you know it didn't go well. But we got a lot of things to talk about. It was also just a big weekend in general. Things happening outside the sports world. The first of which being, oh, by the way, I'm Hayes Parmar. I'm not Adam Gold. Guest host. But if you probably listen to Adam Gold every day, which means you've heard me before because I've been filling in the summer. Victoria, executive producer of the show and person who will be on your radio all afternoon day. If you're listening in the Triangle area. I know we're carried across the great state of North Carolina. The biggest headline in North Carolina was not how bad the Panthers are, but actually a hurricane passing through. Hurricane Ian, I don't think, will go down in the annals of North Carolina hurricane history. It'll be one of those ones where you can't quite remember your name. What was it? The Dorian or the whatever. But that's not to say that it didn't have a huge impact or affect lives. And in fact, people in North Carolina died, which is why we always respect hurricanes. And I was going off about this last week. Yes, you can hear about all the hurricane stuff, see it on your news, laugh at the local reporters who are just out there, just in a little bit of rain, when it doesn't hit you, right? And it's if you've been through one and it doesn't hit you hard and it doesn't affect you and it doesn't knock out your power and it doesn't flood your basement or whatever, and you go through three or four like that, you're like, I've been through a hurricane. Every time it seems like they go over the top or whatever. But when that one that impacts your life and changes it hits, you'll never forget it. For some people, it was Hugo through Charlotte. For me personally, it was Fran, even though I was evacuated for Bertha, but still didn't quite realize what hurricane power was until Fran, when I saw it, you know, up close and personal. For many people, it was Floyd. There are many others. And again, there's some that I don't recall, but affected some community greatly because it was their river or their creek that flooded or took out their power for several weeks. And everyone else kind of moves on, and hopefully we do our best to clean up. But I never want to minimize hurricanes. If you got through the weekend without losing power, great. For me, it was classic hurricane, big limb down. Next day, got to get out there, start chopping it. I will say, I thought we had a deal with Mother Nature.
Right.
In place that after hurricanes, we're supposed to get like we had a super cool sunset right before it came through.
Yeah.
Thursday night, maybe. Post hurricane, I thought we were due some like gorgeous skies and a couple clear days, right?
Makes sense.
Feels like we're getting gypped on the back end here.
Yes.
I saw people driving down to the Clemson NC State game and College Game Day, and that looked like the beautiful sky you're supposed to see post hurricanes.
Uh-huh.
Not so much. I don't know who we need to talk to.
I don't know.
About
it's a lot
this.
Of residual leftovers going on.
I don't even know if this is part of the hurricane anymore, but I'm over it, and I need back my sunny skies. But to all the folks who did lose power or maybe without power had to deal with flooding, you know, take care. There's information out there about how to do that the best. Watch out for scams. Sadly, in the worst times, some of the worst people come out to do some of the worst things. Victoria, did you lose power or have any other impacts of the hurricane?
Thankfully, no. I just a lot of rain.
Yep.
So my dog wasn't a big fan of it. But,
yes. Definitely messed up the dog routine a little bit.
Yeah.
I got one dog who doesn't care. She'll just like trot out there. Doesn't care if it's raining.
Nothing
the other dog
happened.
Is like, you know, acts like it's like, you know, burning fire. And I'm
how
like,
dare
it's
you make
rain.
Me go outside?
Come on. Otherwise, you're going to be doing it inside.
Right.
So, the other cool thing, the headline for me for this weekend, and I like to shout it out because much like hurricanes, I feel like this is part of North Carolina. The International Bluegrass Music Association Festival was in Raleigh this weekend. Unfortunately, affected somewhat by the hurricane, but they've done this before. Hurricane Matthew came through a few years ago, and they threw things inside. I think because of that, they even had a better plan in place now, and they rolled it out. I will say, I don't know, you don't have to be a fan of bluegrass music to just enjoy the vibes at the Bluegrass Festival. Always get down there. It's a great music community, so I always encourage people to go. I will say it was a little disheartening having to go indoors. There's some things that make it cooler, some ways it could be a more intimate experience, but like the rest of the world, it's been a tough couple of years business-wise for things that couldn't happen or had to be virtual or whatever, and I'm waiting for the breakout, comeback. This is what it is at its fullest, Bluegrass Festival. And unfortunately, because of the hurricane, we didn't quite get that this weekend. Shout out to those who are still dealing with the effects of Hurricane Ian. Shout out to all the great performers who came through. I mean, it is truly an international extravaganza. People come from all countries, all places, and we are sort of the center of the bluegrass world this weekend. And we can't wait to have it back next year. But we also had some sports. So let's talk about those. Get out of the gate. All right, Victoria, I'm curious.
Yes.
Does Adam always go, like, I never know how to handle it. It's Monday, so we got to talk football, right?
But right.
We got big stories that happened Saturday and big stories that happened Sunday because
yes.
You got two different days. Do you work backwards through the weekend, like Sunday and then Saturday? Or do you, like, go chronologically through the weekend, like, here are the games that were Saturday and here's Sunday? Or is it about what is more pleasant to talk about? Because I can do it in any order.
Exactly.
But,
you know, it's whatever just floats your boat, basically. No pun intended. Maybe,
right.
Sort of. But, yeah, you can do it however you want to. Sometimes the bigger stories are towards the end.
All right. Well, the Panthers aren't good enough to be playing in big games, so we'll talk about them later. Even though NC State lost, that was the big game. It was College Game Day. NC State at Clemson, a 30-20 loss. It was an interesting game. State didn't wilt under the pressure of Clemson and College Game Day. There were a few years where Wake Forest was a good team, but every time they played Clemson, it was like, we're not in that class. Every time they played Clemson, it was clear they're not in that class. Last year, they won the ACC, but it still didn't look like they were in Clemson's class. This year, obviously, that was different for Wake. They took them to double overtimes. They looked like they are playing on the Clemson level, not quite over the hump by beating them, but obviously right there. So in that same vein, State didn't look like they couldn't play with Clemson. They didn't look like it was, recruiting rankings-wise, Clemson does have technically more better players. They pay their coaches technically more, so in theory they're thought of as, you know, maybe a higher level. But basically that looked like two good football teams going at it. And in fact, with about 2 minutes to go in the half, NC State looked like it had played the road slight underdog very well, right? Don't let anything crazy happen. Don't beat yourself. Don't make mistakes. Don't give up big plays. They had gave up a long drive that resulted in a field goal. They had a long drive that resulted in a field goal. They weren't getting antsy. They weren't wilting in the moment. And then they took the lead 13-6. Do I have that right?
Believe so, yes.
Okay, I can't remember exactly. State took the lead, and it looked like, hey, get another stop. Defense has been well, and then we'll get the ball back with maybe a chance to add to the lead. The script was playing perfect for the underdog upset, right? But then Clemson got a little explosive, got some big plays, took the lead before halftime with a touchdown, and then followed that up with a three and out coming out of halftime, and then another score. And basically, the game wasn't over at that point, but they had sort of flexed on State pretty hard. Now, a couple things, observations for me. Clemson a couple years ago, DJ Uiagalelei had the bad misfortune of following Trevor Lawrence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which meant regardless of what he was, people were like, be Trevor Lawrence. Like, do exactly what he did and we'll be just as good. And he's not the same guy. He's not the same player. But they have done a good job of figuring out how to maximize DJ Uiagalelei, right? Not making him pass 45-10 times a game. Yes, making teams aware that he can run and he's a big dude. He's got that Cam Newton. I know Chip Harrison was on the show talking about him being a Cam Newton-esque role. He's got that ability to, like, almost always he's going to fall forward, right? Like, very rarely DJ Uiagalelei running is going to, like, move backwards. He's going to advance the ball because he's a big dude and he's got the ball in his hands and he can move. Now, he broke open a couple of big runs that State would have, you know, liked to contain him. But Clemson, they didn't do anything crazy, but they utilized DJ. Do we just call him DJU? Is that,
yeah,
is that easier than me
easiest,
trying to say it every time?
Yes.
But I just wanted to say it one or two times just to let you know I could.
You got it down.
I said it.
Right.
So now it's like a newspaper article. Second reference, I could just go with the shorter name. All right, so they did a great job using DJ. Devin Leary, I won't say that State didn't use him. They did take a couple shots. The receivers clearly aren't the level that they were last year. They have been at times. But I will say there was one time where I thought I could have seen a little more Devin Leary, and it was at the end of the first drive. Remember, Clemson had kicked a field goal. State was driving, and it was sort of like everybody was making their opening statements, right? Clemson made a good opening statement, and they drove, but State answered by holding them to a field goal when it was goal to go. State gets down there, first and goal, and I believe the three plays they ran were a kind of shovel pass for basically a run play that was technically a pass because he chucked it forward, but a run play that I think was supposed to be a sweep, then another run play, and then a QB draw from Devin Leary, I think. I believe I have that right. And I just would have liked to seen in a big moment where it's like maybe you come out of the first two drives up 7-3 with your defense feeling good and now your offense feeling good. I would have liked to have seen Devin Leary ball on his hands twice, looking to make a play. I know you're closer to the end zone, so it's harder for QB, but maybe he would have run it in out of the play as opposed to like a QB draw. Clemson owned the lines. They are the better team there. That's where they're their strength, but they didn't outclass NC State. Here's what Dave Doran said about the game afterwards.
Well, I mean, winning here in the last 36 games, our try didn't get it done. We had to play that better than we did tonight. Here you give Clemson credit. They won the line of scrimmage. Their D-line played really good. I thought they had a good game plan defensively. They played a lot looser in the secondary, made it hard for us to run by them. And their D-line pressured us. You know, on defense, we had some opportunities right before the half to walk in with a lead, getting the ball back, and had a coverage breakdown that led to Shipley's play, and then we had a chance at an interception we dropped, and then they scored. That was a big possession for them, I think, as we took the lead there last season. But, yeah, it's a hard-fought game, and Clemson outplayed us, and obviously that means they outcoached us today.
He's right. Can I hear the very beginning of that? Just the first, like, couple seconds. I love Dave Doran here.
Well, I mean, winning here in the last 36 games, our try didn't get it done.
Yeah, just reminding you, hey, yeah. Hey, nobody comes in
we're
here
not the
and
only
just
one.
Walks away with a win, all right? It's not that easy. But no, I think he was exactly right. They got beat on the lines. The Shipley touchdown at the end of the first half was a backbreaker. Yes, State fans, I think maybe they got a call wrong. I'm sorry. I do think maybe he fumbled and they missed it, but, you know, so be it. And also, in a game like this, where State's trying to knock off the bigger team, even though it seems like they're on the same level now. It's not like it was an outclass. It wasn't a David versus Goliath. But Clemson, especially being the home team, having the pedigree of Clemson, you know, you had to go in there. You needed to make some breaks. Either you could say have some things go your way, but in big games, sometimes you got to create those. And Doran mentioned one of those, too. Dropped interception opportunities. One or two, one that might have been, like, returned. Another one that may have prevented, you know, Clemson, Cameron, if they ended up scoring on the possession. So you miss some interception opportunities. Then you give up an interception on a tip ball, which is tough, you know. And it looked like Devin and the receiver weren't quite on the same page of where he was supposed to be on that one. He wanted the guy to sit down in the spot, and the guy kept kind of drifting, so the ball ended up being behind him. It's a tip ball interception. One of those is tough to swallow because it doesn't feel like he made a terrible play, and it ends up beating you bad. So State didn't create any breaks. They had a couple go against them, and it's a tough game. The season is not over. It does feel like State's at the point now where winning 9 games and going to a pretty cool bowl is good. It's a continuation of the program, but it doesn't feel like progress, right? Progress at this point means beating Clemson and or winning the Atlantic Division. And now with Clemson having beat Wake Forest and NC State, it's not to say they couldn't lose 2 games, but it's just going to be a real uphill battle. And so it feels like more of a disheartening loss than maybe it is. Like, State could win out and not win the Atlantic, and they end a year with a really good record, but you didn't beat Clemson and you didn't win the Atlantic Division. And that feels like short of their goals. You know? Next up, getting out of the game. College football did go well for a bunch of other teams in the state. And we're going to talk about perception of college football a little bit later because I think it comes into play here a lot. But UNC won over Virginia Tech 41-10. You know how we've been saying repeatedly that UNC's defense is every other team's, like, get-right game? Like, oh, man, we're struggling. Oh, good, we get to play against UNC's defense. Our offense now has worked out the kinks,
yeah,
baby. We're running for 100 yards. We're throwing for touchdowns. Virginia Tech is that same thing for other teams' defenses. Their offense is so bad that I'm sure I didn't listen to the post game. I'm sure there are a lot of good things to say about adjustments that the D made and how they played harder and they played smarter. But also, it just helped that you were playing Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Like, Virginia Tech is every defense's get right game, and they did it. They put up 10 points. UNC's offense, no surprise, score again, 41-10. Drake May continues to put up huge numbers, threw for three touchdowns, ran for two. He's playing so well that he might have UNC as a preseason top 10 team next year, only to, you know, fall apart in the first game against Virginia Tech. No, he is doing great things, and looks like he'll be around for a couple years. There are a couple times where you're like, the game's at hand. I realize you still, you know, you want to get out there and compete, but, like, maybe don't run it as much, Drake May.
Right.
We saw, there were times where it felt like Sam Howell last year was getting a little beat up when he didn't have to. Save that for the games where it's close and you need to get the extra yard. But no, UNC's offense looked good. Virginia Tech, I don't know what to tell you about UNC. They're going to put up probably close to 40 in most games, but they also, you don't know. I mean, you could see them losing to Duke, losing to State, losing to Miami, but you can see them beating all those teams, right? Like, it's they're going to be a toss-up every time, and you don't know what you're going to get. Maybe more importantly, I feel bad now. I feel bad for Wake Forest because I'm doing to Wake Forest what everyone else does to Wake Forest. I should have talked about Wake Forest before UNC. A huge win for Wake, 31-21 over Florida State. I know Florida State isn't the same Florida State they have been, but they were in the top 25. They are not a terrible team. And just, if you've watched ACC football as long as I have, I don't care who the players are, who the team is, who the coach is. If you go to Florida State and win, that's a good win.
Yeah.
And Wake Forest continues to show, like, maybe they are just a little bit behind Clemson as far as the class of the ACC right now. But I feel like everybody wrote them off because it's like, well, if you didn't beat Clemson, then you're back in the pile with just everybody else. And Wake Forest is a really, really, really good team. Again, we'll talk a little bit later about perceptions of football team and why that matters so much. I'm glad Wake Forest did start, I believe, in the preseason top 25.
Yeah.
But they maybe should have been a preseason top 15 team. And when they lose, they fall more than other teams. And when they win, they don't rise as fast as other teams. And that's not just Wake Forest that's true of. But a huge win for them to continue to show. Hey, again, they know losing to Clemson doesn't mean the end of the season. It happened last year.
Yeah.
They take care of work in a very, 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 very tough Atlantic division, and maybe other people will help them out and take out Clemson. Next up, Duke tied for the lead in the Coastal Division with a 38-17 win over Virginia. Mike Elko has got to be the leader for ACC Coach of the Year in my eyes right now. Obviously, you know, if Dabo Swinney goes undefeated, I'm sure he'll win it, but Mike Elko, nobody expected anything of Duke. Not only were they picked last in the ACC in preseason, I believe I have that right. I believe they were picked even behind Georgia Tech. I mean, if you ranked teams nationally, Duke would have been low, 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 low there. So kudos to Mike Elko and team for coming in and energizing, reawakening the roster that was there, finding stuff to get out of it. And a win in the Coastal, you don't know what's going to win the Coastal. No. It might be 4-4. Probably not. I don't know if mathematically that could even happen, but like 5-3. So like chalk it up there. Like Georgia Tech just took out Pitt, right? Like we talked about UNC could lose to anybody. Duke, go out there and win you a Coastal championship in the last year. Why not? That would be a fitting end to the Coastal Division. And finally, getting out of the gate. Do we have to talk about him?
I don't really want to.
The hapless, miserable, worthless Carolina Panthers, and I'm going to tell you later in the show, the Panthers are becoming something worse than bad. Like it's being bad and worse than being uninteresting, which is also a tear. Like, you can be bad but interesting, and life isn't the worst. They are bad, uninteresting, and one more thing that I'm going to tell you about a little bit later, but let's talk about yesterday's game. They lost 26-16 to the Arizona Cardinals, who are also not very good. And bear in mind, last week the Panthers scored 22 points. This week they scored 16 points. That's 38 total points in those two games. But remember, 14 of those points were scored by the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm giving the defense credit for the extra points on the touchdown they scored. Sorry, deal with it. I'm not getting the offense credit for extra points other times either. So 14 of the 38 points scored by defense. That's 24 points in two games against the Saints and the Cardinals, not necessarily considered great teams in the NFL this year. And I can't remember the exact stat, but it was something like Matt Rhule is maybe 1-20, maybe had 0 or 1 win when his team scores fewer than 17 points.
Yikes.
Right now, the offense is averaging 16 points a game.
Wow.
Without the help of the defense, the defense is making it look like they're scoring a respectable amount, and they are not. The defense is good.
Mm-hmm.
They're still not great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they pressure the quarterback quite enough.
No.
But they play well. They play smart. They seem like they know what they're doing. But they're not Baltimore Ravens carry you to a Super Bowl, you know, as long as you don't throw an interception.
Not at all.
Good. And they certainly are not good enough to carry this woeful Panthers offense. The people were booing yesterday, and deservedly so, partly because Matt Rhule kept getting, Baker Mayfield kept getting balls knocked down. Baker Mayfield addressed the booing with an interesting answer.
Obviously, I'm frustrated with the fact that we're 1-3. I mean, that's it, though. Hey, we're 4 weeks into the year. You know, we can sit here and let you guys pile on us, or we're going to come together as a locker room. That's exactly how we're going to handle it. I don't really care about the fact that our fans are booing or what's going on. We're going to figure it out. And when we win, it'll still be just us in the locker room. And that's really all I care about. So we're going to be just fine.
I mean, you got to say that. But there's nothing that we've seen to suggest that this team has some great turnaround coming.
Yeah.
It has been a bad team. I think somebody tweeted that Baker also said about the booing, like, didn't we go down and score a touchdown after they booed?
Right.
It's like, maybe it didn't matter. I think a lot of times in the NFL draft combine era, we make too big a deal of hand size and how tall you are and stuff like that. But there's a reason why the average quarterback is a little bit taller, right? And that's not to say that you can't be a good... I don't think Drew Brees was super tall.
No.
I don't think you... But you have to compensate for it. You got to figure it out. You got to figure out a way to have the lineman not know exactly when you're going to throw it. Maybe you got to move your quarterback around a little bit. That's coaches making adjustments. That's the player himself making an adjustment. But I think it was 5 batted balls. I mean, J.J. Watt was just going Dikembe Mutombo out there. And swatting
going
everything
crazy. Yeah.
That Mayfield tried to throw. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Matt Rhule talking about the batted down passes as only Matt Rhule can.
Yeah, you know, they showed up today, so there's no denying that we have to get it fixed. I think for us, you know, we have to go back and watch the tape. You know, that last one was 4th and, you know, half a foot, you know, was a handoff to Christian with an RPO versus free access, kind of the same type of a throw that we had made before the half to DJ to kick the field goal, you know, sort of that out route. And I'd have to see the tape. I know they blitzed off the edge, so I'd have to see exactly, but I saw one on the Jumbotron, you know, they just kind of mirrored the quarterback and got their hands up. So I can't give you a definitive, hey, we have to do this. I do know that we have to get it corrected, right? There's too many, and obviously one leading to the, you know, to a back-breaking, you know, interception, you know, that led to, I think it was 10 points off of turnovers.
Much like we did with Dave Doran. Let me hear the beginning of that again. I love the phrase he uses here. Here's Matt Rhule.
Yeah, you know, they showed up today.
That right there.
Yeah.
They showed up today.
Right. Are they not supposed to show up on game day?
Batted balls. They just showed up.
Yeah.
I don't know. They were dropped out of a plane.
Yeah.
Batted passes. Who knew that the defense was trying to bat down the balls?
Yeah.
They showed up today.
Uh-huh.
That's how he explains that. And I'm going to talk a little bit later about Dennis Cox doing his impersonation of Matt Rhule, because I think it plays into a bigger point that I'm going to make. But the first time I heard Cox doing a Matt Rhule impersonation was sometime during the summer, and he said that Matt Rhule has this tendency to, like, not want to talk about bad things that happen, and his deflection is, well, we'll have to check the tape on it. I think he said we'll have to watch the tape 3 times in that, like, 30-second clip of, like, well, I don't know what to tell you. Like, we'll have to watch the tape. Like, well, okay, well, we'll have a press conference tomorrow after you've watched the tape. So, like, make sure every time he says we have to check the tape, write that one down and be like, hey, what did you see when you checked the tape on that?
And that's been his go-to.
I think they do ask him, but it is funny. Just every Sunday, it's like, yeah, we need to check the tape and see what went wrong.
No, I can check the tape for you. They are reading us like a book. This is ridiculous.
But I need Cox in his next Matt Rhule is going to have to use the phrase, they showed up today. Batted balls showed up. Uh-huh. It makes it sound like they're like minions, like just bubbling their way. Oh no, here come the batted balls. They showed up today.
I just happened to be here.
Who gave them tickets? We should not have let them in. They showed up.
Right.
I mean, just the
crashing
language.
The party.
And finally, we'll end the segment on a high note the same way we started it. Just a shout out to the Durham Bulls winning the Triple A championship, their third in 12 years. We need relegation in baseball. I don't know who the worst team in baseball this year is or who the least attended. I'm sure the Pirates or the Rays or somebody was bad. The Royals, they usually stink, right? Make them a Triple A team and let the Bulls play majors 1 year.
Yes.
Guarantee you it'll be sold out every year. Uh-huh. This is not Hayes Permar advocating for a major league team. This is Hayes Permar saying the Durham Bulls are basically the 33rd major league team at this point, and that we'll sell the park out if actual major league teams came to play there.
Yeah.
And then if the Bulls finish bottom five in Major League Baseball, they fall back to the tops of minor league baseball, and they got to fight for it there. I think relegation will never happen in baseball, but I think it'd be super cool. I think the Durham Bulls deserve it.
Yes.